Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, May 8th, 2023. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people joining through phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everybody who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute and or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, click on the raise hand icon. That will raise or lower your virtual hand. If you're able to use these tools, it would be very helpful because it indicates us that somebody's trying to make some comments and we can have one speaker at a time. At this point, everybody should be on mute. I would appreciate if you stay on mute unless speaking. It helps us eliminate any external noise. So I thank you in advance for that. Just a gentle reminder that we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, it's helpful for them if you state your name before your comments. It helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at the time. Madam Chair, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda and then take the roll call of the AAC members if you agree.
Anu, that sounds perfect. Yes, please. Right.
And before I do that, I would like to share my screen for the convenience of the members who are able to view it. And as I read, I will be going through the agenda. So if you would give me one quick second while I share. Thank you. And I believe my screen is shared at this point.
Yes, it's visible.
Wonderful. Thank you. So after I finish reading the agenda, I will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, the chair will review and approve today's meeting minutes and last month's meeting. I apologize. Today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We do have Lynn Bowersox and perhaps a team to discuss and review, discuss the review of open gangway design after the New York trip that some of the AAC members joined into. We do have Jewel Bell, Gregory Edwards, and perhaps other members who I may not have seen at this point to share information about Metrobus courtesy stops policy. And our third topic for discussion is the Better Bus Network Redesign Visionary Network. And we will have William Jones to share information about that. At 5:45, we will take any public comments. And the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6. I would stop sharing my screen. Now we will go through the roll call. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Azar Aturo.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Rico is connected on this meeting. And for the convenience of the ASL members, Rico Dancy does require the service. Thank you. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin. Steve Caffin informed that he is unable to join today. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
Present.
Thank you. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samaford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonov. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes today's roster. Chair Calabia, at this point, before I do that, we do have three wonderful presentations, guest speakers today. And I would ask for any guest speaker, if you're using a visual presentation, please do describe it in detail for the convenience of our members, AAC members, and the members of public who are blind or have low vision. So thank you. Chair Calabia.
I'm here, this is Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas. At this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. Chair Calabia, you have the floor. Tino?
Oh gosh.
I can hear you, can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Please move.
Okay, so our first speaker is Lynn Bowersox. Lynn, if you are connected.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, wonderful. We can see you and hear you, Lynn. Go ahead.
So I'm here with Dave Souter, so that's why his name comes up and mine doesn't. We're together here at the Greenbelt Rail Yard. We're having some, he has one set of technical issues, I have another, but together we can be here with you today. So thank you.
Wonderful.
So Anu, I did send you a slide, and while you're getting that slide, let me just thank again the members of the AAC who came with us to New York, and Sandy and Rico and Tino and Thomas and Philippa, and who did I miss?
I think you got everyone.
Okay, good.
You got it, yes.
We had a great day, and we got a lot of good feedback. And I just want to go through with the subcommittee quickly where we are in terms of your feedback before we move forward with the final recommendations on the 8K design. And so for those who can't see, I'm just going to step through this one slide. Basically, we've been keeping a list of the things that the AAC has raised with us, the BRS has raised with us, and the folks who went on the tour have raised with us. And so I just want to take a look at the left side of this list and tell you where we are. So as you know, dedicated wheelchair space is in our renderings, and that is planned in the final design. And that is the decal on the floor with the chair icon sized properly. The next thing is the designated bike luggage stroller space. Again, that is in our design. It's the decal on the floor with the iconography sized appropriately. And then both of those,
recording.
Both of those at the doorway, when you enter the train, you know that you're entering where the wheelchair space is or where the bike and luggage space is. Okay? I'll take questions at the end. The rail operator visibility improvement window, you all will see a sample of that when we have the pop-up studio this month. But we have improved visibility for the rail operator looking back. There was a request for armrests at priority seats. Well, we couldn't do armrests because it would require a second and third seating configuration for the train, which is not a practical solution for us. We do have handholds that are integrated bars at the priority seats, which we think functionally achieve the objective of giving people something to pull up and lower themselves into the seats as grab bars. The open gangway without pinch points and the ability to close off cars. So while Hitachi has not yet selected the provider for that open gangway, We are recommending that we have the gangways through two cars, every married pair. The folks who went to New York saw the one configuration and how it avoided pinch points. We ultimately have in our spec are talking to Hitachi about not having pinch points. And you all saw the screen in New York, and we would have something similar so that the train operator could close off the car, whether that's for maintenance or in an emergency, that would be provided. Again, our car will not be exactly like what you saw in New York. The materials may be different and the sub-suppliers may be different, but the concept is what we're talking about. The door closing lights, the LED lights that are red and green that tell you the doors are opening or closing, we will have in our equipment. The seat covering, we've been asked to have seat covering that's similar to the 7Ks, and we will. The security of the USB chargers you asked us about, we have confirmed that the charging ports are not configured into any of the other electronic systems. They're isolated. It's just power for the phone. It doesn't automatically connect you to Wi-Fi or to any of the train systems or the brains of the train. So the data security is no different than if you were in any other public space. More and more visible digital maps. So we have those in a couple of locations, but most prominently, we have we're working on the designs of the giant iPhone screens that you see, as well as the valance overhead on the side of the cars, both of which could carry maps or versions of maps. And we have the dedicated digital screens that are there by the doors, which would go from paper maps to digital maps in the new equipment. The emergency instruction with more icons, we will be working on that, and we will be showing the committee later on exactly what those emergency instructions look like, but that's the intent there. Halo lighting, this was exciting. So one of the requests was for the white halo lighting there at the emergency call box on the train, and Shushil is with us today. He was able to confirm that we can do that halo lighting for the emergency call box, which I think is a step forward. Information systems, more visible with more content. We all liked very much what we saw in New York, where they had wayfinding, they had station ahead, and they had some street locations and some elevators. We've noted all of that for the content designers for our 8K, and we'll be working on some of those same information points going forward. The improved intercar barrier. we are doing something different than what we saw in New York, and it's an improvement over the 7K that we went over in the RAC meeting. It has four straps, the lowest of which is platform level, so that the foot or ankle will come into contact with it if somebody should try to board a train between two cars that don't have the open gangway. Then we have the non-slip flooring. We do have non-slip flooring in the 7Ks, and we have a flooring sample that we're going to be sharing, but we believe that the non-slip flooring will be at least as slip resistant as the 7Ks. I'm going to try to do a little bit better there if we can. The two things, again, that we didn't get confirmation on, the armrests, we talked about the optional folding seat. There was a suggestion that it might be useful to have a folding seat to use when the dedicated wheelchair space is not in use. We still have that under review. I think that we're leaning against that for maintenance reasons. And frankly, as a practical matter, we don't want folks who use wheelchairs to have to claim that space while someone has pulled down the seat and is sitting there. That could create some conflict that I'm a little bit concerned about. So we're not leaning at this point towards the folding seat. But again, you can see with these 14 items on the left, I think I'm a little over a dozen, that we have taken almost every suggestion that the committee has had and integrated it into our design plan going forward. I know there are questions, so Mr. Chairman, let me turn it back over to you.
Okay. As you know, And I recently reminded the committee our first concern years back related to the inter-car barriers. And that was a problem for WMATA at the time. Even the FTA had to get involved to get something done about the inter-car barriers. In New York, Sandy looked very closely at the inter-car barriers. And maybe, Sandy, you want to comment now about what you saw? Sandy?
So I'm trying to come off mute. Okay. The inter-car barriers, the accordion wall for the open gangway from the platform side, looked impressive, but it was set back far enough from the edge of the car that it still seemed like there was room for accidents, accidental getting between the platform and the car. So Lynn, I'd be very curious to see a mock-up of the four chain or four strap barrier or inter-car connector to kind of close the gap that you have designed and test it out, walking and with a cane to see how easily it would be to contact that lowest strap that would be at platform level. I applaud the concept. I'd like to see it in action though, or at least a mock-up, but yeah, thank you for addressing this.
We will try to get you we will send out through the chair a better rendering that we have. I'm not sure if it's going to give you the comfort that a mock-up will, but I think what we should try to do is maybe get a sample that we can bring in. We don't have it at this time, but we do have a drawing. So let us get that to you.
Okay. This is a step in the right direction.
Thank you. And thank you for your input, Sandy. We appreciate it.
And actually, one more thing, Lynn. Will this be between every car so that it's consistent down the length of the train? That was the other part of the goal, to not have one kind of barrier between married pairs and another type of barrier between sets of married pairs.
So there will be two different types of barriers. There's the gangway, which has got is an inner and an outer tube, if you will. It's got ribs. And that will be between the married pairs. So you'll have the A car and the B car, and the open gangway, the outside of the open gangway will serve as the barrier between the two, between the A and B car. Between married pairs, there will be we call it pantograph style inter-car barrier, which a concept was demonstrated several years ago at Branch Avenue Station. It is very common in the rail industry, this type of barrier, and it's essentially it's four straps that span from the base of the platform up to approximately 45 inches high on the side of the vehicle.
By pantograph, you mean something that looks like an accordion?
So it's a barrier that automatically extends from the front of the vehicle. And when you have two cars, like for example, if you had two A cars coupled together, then this barrier automatically extends from the front of the vehicle and forms a barrier, so that those two halves join together and form a barrier. And it's spring loaded, so it's always pressing against the one car would be pressing against the other car.
By pantograph, I mean, for example, the what's put at the top of stairs so that children don't fall down, that kind, that's not what you're talking about?
No, not like that. No. We, as Lynn stated, we do have some renderings of it, and we would be able to share that with the committee. That would clarify what it actually the form of this particular barrier.
Okay. With respect to the need for shorter people while they're standing to have some stability, I sent you along a inside view of Toronto's open gangways train, and it shows that at the top of the middle of the car, there's a pole running down from front to back, and on the pole are swinging handles that swing up when they're not used and then can be drawn down when somebody needs them. Is there anything like that envisioned?
We have, as you may know, Mr. Chairman, we have the new center car stanchion, which has three areas of handhold, sort of like a triangle, that will be added. That's in addition to what we have in the 7K. And so we think that that will provide some stability for people who can't reach the higher grab bars. But no, we have not brought anything down from the ceiling. We have some concerns about standees and, you know, anything coming down from the ceiling on top of people.
Then maybe it's time to turn to Thomas. Thomas, you had... You tried to maneuver around and envision problems when we were in New York trying to get around the stanchions. Do you want to speak up now?
Yes. My thing was, by the poles being right there, as soon as you open up the door, what have you, during rush hour, nobody going to want to move. So they're not going to want to move. How is people in wheelchairs like myself gonna be able to get in there? You see what I'm saying? So you have the pole like back some, what have you, people in wheelchairs get in there, like we could get into the train that we use now, by having the pole reach you. As soon as you get into the van, as soon as you get into the train, that's not good, because during rush hour, How wheelchair user gonna be able to get on the train?
So I think, Thomas, what we had envisioned was that the wheelchair spaces would be closest to the doors.
Yes.
And so the doors are demarcated with the wheelchair icon. So you'd be able to go into the door and right to the wheelchair space, and you wouldn't have to maneuver through the car.
But like, what if the wheelchair space is already taken up with strollers or other wheelchairs, and you still want to get on there? How are you going to be able to get on there then?
Right. So the hope is that once the stroller and luggage demarcation spaces are available, that people won't use the wheelchair space. They'll use the spaces that are available for their equipment.
Yeah. Okay. But I don't think that's hardly gonna happen, because by us being able to catch the train to the airports and stuff like that, it's gonna be used for suitcases, it's gonna be used for everything else but what it's meant to be used.
I think we can make sure that the priority signage is there that says please allow this space. And I know none of these are perfect solutions, I do understand, but there's no perfect solution, right?
Right, but like you can move to poles maybe, that give us an option, because people don't really pay attention to the signage that much. And they look at people that's wheelchair users as a nuisance, as a bother, or what have you. So I don't see them really looking out for us. Let's see, they haven't been doing it that well so far.
So I think one of the things we need to understand is what the highest priority is for the AAC. Is it the stanchions that give people more hand grab opportunities, more bars for more people, including people who are shorter, people who are more vulnerable, who need that hand to hang on? Right. Or is it more space for wheelchair navigation?
Oh no, I'm not saying I have the bars, but when you have them right there at the door as we come in to the train, because like the trains that we have now, you still have the bars, but you have them set off from the door. They're not right there at the door. So I'm saying.
So on the, I know on the 7000 series, there isn't, right currently, there is no stanchion in the center of the car, which is a problem for folks to be able to have a handhold sometimes. There's a lot of open space on the 7K in the center of the car. So the thinking here was to add an extra stanchion into the center of the car to allow more standees to have a place to have a handhold.
So it's not at the door.
Well, it's not at the door. No, it's in the center of the car across from the door pocket.
But what I've seen in New York, it was right at the door. Right, each door open. It was right there at the door.
At the center of the car? I thought
it was not the center of the car. Right there at the door as you coming in to the train.
Okay.
It was right there. And you had to maneuver past that.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I didn't say nothing about the center of the train.
Okay. I don't think ours are planned for the doors when you first enter. They're planned for the center. So I think that's a difference in the design than what you saw.
Okay.
And well, the one thing is too, there will be opportunities to review this as we move forward with the soft mock-up and then further with the hard mock-up.
And I think that's where we need to see the pole and where it sits, right?
Yes.
And test it ourselves based on our design.
May I say something in reference to that location, please? This is Carol Lopez. And the reason I'm saying it is because Mr. Mangrum shared that when we were in New York. The stanchion that's centered in front of the door between the two doors, it was an issue because when you enter through the central door, for example, and if you want to go to the wheelchair location that's across from the door you entered, you have to go through customers that are holding on to a post. It's very easy to navigate if there's no one holding on to those posts. But when you're trying to navigate into a crowded car where somebody's holding on to something in the right in front of the door, Mr. Mangrum, his concern was that, and he expressed it very heavily to me when I was there. So I am saying that again. I did notice that in New York they had the stanchion that was near the ADA spaces, offset from the door. So perhaps that might be better. I will let Mr. Mangrum talk about that if he noticed it. But I just wanted to sort of explain what was when we were there.
Yeah, thank you. Because that's exactly what I was trying to get across to everyone. I was going to talk about the pole in the center of the train because I do know some of them poles, it's not just for people to hold on to, but to keep the train stabilized, whatnot, with the ceiling. So I understand that. But like I explained before, having the pole reach you so you get into the train and you got to move around the pole soon as the door opens, how's that going to work when it's a crowd of people on the train?
Okay.
That's why I was trying to get across.
Thank you both for those clarifications. And we're going to look back at our design and make sure that That's not the case in our cars.
Yes, go ahead.
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We still have three people with their hands up. Pat Sheehan, Doris Ray, and Phil Posner. So Pat, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu and Tino. Lynn, let's see, a couple of things. Going back to what Sandy talked about, the between car door barriers, I assume that there is a requirement in the contract then to be able to have these between car door barriers as part of this overall configuration. I'm less interested in what we have there as opposed to whether there is any kind of gap between the let's say the rail and where the straps would be. So I think I might have misinterpreted this, but I think Sandy said, although you had a barrier there, there was a 10 to 12 inch gap between the platform or what would have been the platform and the train. That allows me to take a step forward or maybe have my cane in that position, lose my cane because there's a gap there. I need the securements, whatever they're going to be, you know, so that I can't take that first step.
So I'm going to ask Sandy to be clear. I thought she was referring to the New York train being like that, not to our train, but I just want to be sure.
And it may be the New York train. I don't know. But I'm just saying that I think what we need to have is a between car door barrier that's not going to allow me to take that first step so that whatever, if it's a strap, if it's an accordion kind of thing, whatever it's going to be, I can't take that first step because my cane will hit it or my front foot will hit it or something like that. And then my last question is going to be, before these trains get delivered, are we going to be able to see a mock-up here, how something like this would look, let's say, sort of in a rail station or something like that?
Yes.
Okay, that would be extremely helpful because then we can look at get real close to the, between car door barriers, see how, what Thomas is talking about, see if that pole is not going to be in the way and really be able to walk on it. Okay, that's great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So if you could address the first question, that'd be great.
So Sandy, were you speaking about your experience in New York? I just want to be clear.
From what I could see in New York, they had that accordion wall was set back 10 or 12 inches from the edge, the face, the outside exterior wall of the train. So that would be 10 or 12 inches from the edge of the platform. And then it curved under and away from the platform, which would probably give it 12 or 15 inches at the base. Yes, there was a chain across, but that chain was not down at the level of the platform. That chain was up, 12, 15 inches. So you could easily get your cane and your foot under the chain, not bumping into that accordion wall and going into a gap. So that design to me that we saw in New York was not a good design. That was not solving the problem. What I see on the 7000 series cars here in DC is a similar, the chain is high enough up, although it's close to the outside wall face of the train cars, it's high enough up that your foot, your calf, your front of your cane can go under it and into a gap very easily if you're not paying attention and you can't see that this is a gap between cars. So I see the problem in both places. One of the points I'm trying to make over and over and over again is that whatever the solution is, that it is consistently good between the AB married pair, even if that has the accordion wall, and then it's good between the back end of a B car and the front end of an A car, the next married pair, so that whichever between, you know, the AB car or the next BA car, it's consistently good from the platform side so that you can't walk into any of those gaps by mistake.
Yes.
I recently shared a photo of the New York chains between the gaps of, I guess, the married pairs. And I hope you look at it again. That reminds me that after WMATA turned down the idea of open gangway trains, Denise Rush, who is vice chair of the full AAC, Denise and I went on a field trip. Anu was there, Carol was there, and they showed us a design with not chains, but with, they almost look like ribbons, but they're obviously stronger than that. And I'll send that to you as well. It might be, as a matter of fact, with respect to how low they should be, Denise got out of her wheelchair, and I had never seen her do that before. She got out of her wheelchair, she used her stick, and she noticed that while the barriers looked good enough, she suggested that they would have to be lowered. And assuming that they were lowered, Denise and I went back to the AAC, and we recommended that prototype, which never again appeared, but that prototype be used. I will send you a copy of the, I'll send you a photo of that. Let's see, Phil Posner is on, and Doris and Philippa.
Yes, this is Phil. Good evening. I had a question about the seating. Are we still going into the split seating? So there will be benches and there will be a longitudinal bench down one side.
So if I may, Dr. Posner, it's not a bench like you know a bench, right? It's a horizontal seat, but it's the seats that are similar to what you see on the 7K today.
Yes, and those are the regular seats, but they also showed on one side of the car the New York subway style bench that runs from one end to the other. That was the picture that we saw last time. And the question is, if we have seats on one side, can we maintain the handholds on the seats for stability for the standing passengers? And then the concept is, and I leave that up to the designers, do you put them on the top where they are now, or do you put them a little on the side? That way people aren't grabbing the back of someone's head. If they're on the side, they may be something that people will run into as they're moving up and down the car. So the professionals should decide the best placement, but having a handhold on the seat is really important for the person in the seat behind to use to stand up and sit down, and for the people that are standing in the aisles to have some stability. And I think that would be wonderful.
We are preserving that. That's on the 7Ks, and we're preserving that on the 8s.
Yes. Now, the longitudinal, the side saddle seats, as I call them, I would suggest that anyone wanting that ride the New York subway system during rush hour, which I do all the time. And I have made a lot of friends sitting on my knee or holding a part of my body to stand up or sit down or actually sleeping on both sides of me and waving their toes at me. And so if there is no way to differentiate the average size of a seat, there's going to be a problem. We see that now in DC, where we're much more courteous than they are in New York. But unless there are, and I know there have been some designs to have some handrails put in along that longitudinal seat, which will help people get up, get down, and it also will tell people that they shouldn't be sleeping on those seats. And think about the designs of some of the benches on the platforms and why they were put there for that very reason. Because as people get wider, there'll be a lot more intimacy on those seats. But thank you.
So I just wanted to reiterate, there are vertical stanchions along those bench style seats, and they have the same exact padding as the transverse seats. But so there is a vertical stanchion at a different seat locations. There's like 5 seats in a row in the current configuration, and there's 3 stanchions across that.
And they are configured to look like individual seats, not a bench.
They are. Yes, they are. They have individual seat cushions.
Again, you'll see in the studio and something you'll see in the mock-up later.
Thank you. That's fantastic.
I think Darcy.
For holding stability and for intimacy.
I loved your description, though. I might borrow it.
Doris, you're muted. Okay, Doris.
I was unmuting. I'm sorry. I have one quick question, and then I have another. So the quicker question is in the beginning, we when we talked about these gangway trains, there was an issue that WMATA enunciated, which was there was a concern that trains would not, the gangways would not facilitate the curves that are in the rails on our system, particularly, you know, in outdoor situations. So my question is, does this design answer that problem?
Yes. So the car builder, Hitachi, has done the initial studies for the open gangway, and they've confirmed that it can negotiate all the curves on the line as well as in the yards.
Okay. So my other concern and question, I support 110% the comments made by my colleagues Patrick and Sandy, and then second and Tino as well. So my question about this is, in adding trains that have gangways, what is the biggest purpose? Because I'm concerned that we're going to have people sitting and people with bikes and all kinds of people in these gangways. I thought part of the big purpose of the gangways was to allow people to traverse from one train to the other. And in fact, originally I thought we had wanted that people to be able to go all the way through. And I'm wondering about a design that has people sitting in that opening rather than making the gangways in such a design that whether you're in a wheelchair or whether you're or have other mobility devices or whether you're walking, you can traverse the trains, particularly in emergencies. And you know, would that be a design that would be less expansive and also facilitate better coming up with an exterior design that's cane detectable? And I'm not sure that we've gone there, but the question is, should we be going there? For me, should we be going there, and would it be cheaper in the end? I mean, we made a lot of effort in designing the 7000 series trains and to go to something a bit more radical in terms of having to change the design concerns me. And the last thing I will say is I think having stanchions or handholds certainly not impeding the way of a wheelchair user through the length of the train is important, but I am very, very concerned about having hanging rails or mounted rails on the ceilings and hanging handholds that are not very stable and that cause in some cases, depending on how they're mounted, can cause a protruding object barrier to people who are blind and vision impaired, and they aren't very stable. And I ride trains and buses all the time. So,
Darth, they don't have handholds that can. David and Lynn, do you want to respond?
Well, to the first point, you know, the gangway is not designed for as a seating area. So passengers are not going to spend time. There is no facility for the passengers to spend a lot of time there. It is a passageway. We are designing it to be as wide as possible to facilitate ease of ingress with wheelchairs and also just to allow a good passenger flow. So that's the first point. There would be no reason for a passenger to want to congregate in the gangway.
That's right. So the design that you've seen has seats outside the gangway. It takes advantage of every free inch of space to provide seating, but it's not actually in the gangway proper.
But the standing does allow for 10% more passengers to be on board. That I've read about other open gangways use.
Yeah, people, so the passenger, that's exactly right. And not only that, but the passenger flow is better because of the wider aisles and so forth. And so I think movement through two cars is going to be much improved.
Yes. Let's see. Was Darnese? No. Philippa?
Philippa was next.
Philippa.
Good evening, everyone. Afternoon, I should say. I am in Cancun, but this was an important meeting to me, so I came back to my room, gave up some sun to participate. I just wanted to say, first of all, I sent a picture to Anu. I emailed you a picture of the barriers so that everyone could see what Sandy was describing. And I don't know if we already gave general impressions of what we saw or is this the time to do that?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just going to say that from what I saw, I think the DC train, I think Metro is already committed to the gangway. So that's probably a moot point to argue, but which is fine with me that it's gangway. But I thought the DC train was much better than the, God, everybody keeps knocking on my door. Okay, was much better than the New York train. But a couple of things I did like better about New York, if it was not already mentioned, there was a sign at each door that's kind of up in the ceiling that gives you just the name of one station that's ahead. And Metro does kind of the red or orange on black, which is not very visible for people with low vision. And New York had, I think, a white or a light blue on black, and the high contrast made that very visible. The print was very large, and it took up the full space. I think she's already discussed the barrier, so I won't go into that. And the station ahead, the full station ahead signs, they had a very small sign above the door, and I couldn't even see it I had a little a little telescope, and I still couldn't read or understand what was on that sign. So that was, I think, what Metro is doing in terms of the station ahead signs, if they're still on the side of the seat, is much better. So just wanted to give those few points.
Lynn and David?
So we just want to thank you for taking time from the sun to come in and share your thoughts.
But of course.
We in fact do have those sign changes and those differences, and have noted that I think it was universal that people really liked the contrast that they saw on the signage in the New York car between the dark and the light. And so we've taken note of that and we'll use that as a guide. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Great.
Denise?
I'm sorry. Also, what I liked was the fact that y'all had the technology to let people know when security was on the landing, and the train will automatically let people know that security is there. So I think that's something that we could use in DC also. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Denise? Denise, you're muted, Denise. While she gets unmuted, Patrick,
thanks. Just very, very quickly, thank you for bringing up the color contrast issue. I think I've been involved in a lot of color contrast discussions right now, and I know that IT-wise, under 508, we use 4.5:1 as a contrast ratio, which is very similar to, I think, what Philippa said, or also a contrast ratio that has a 50-degree rate of difference between the background and the foreground. Those are two areas that I've seen as far as, you know, measuring color contrast to make sure that A does not blend into B. So I don't know if in contrast, and Carol, maybe you can help here, in color contrast, how you discern if the light of something is going to be contrastable with the background. Do you have, I don't know if there's a formula for that.
Our office, this is Carol Lopez. Our office checks for color contrast with a color contrast calculator that's WCAG compliant.
That's what?
That is WCAG
double. Okay, so using, right, okay. Yeah. 4.5:1 then. Okay, great. I get what you're using.
And by the way, I just wanted to let you know that because of the participation of the AAC committee, our current PID signs on our platforms have that very high contrast on our PID signs on the new. So so this is something that Metro has been doing for a while, and I'm
that's
sure
good. Good to know what the standard is.
Okay,
good.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to have a quick question, Carol. You say high contrast, but what colors?
It's black background with white lettering.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing that up. Yep.
Denise, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay,
Denise.
This is Ms. Rush. I appreciate that the AAC was allowed to visit in New York, but what I thought, they were going to actually be riding on the cars, because New York doesn't have the curves that we have, and they don't, you know, they're straight, and you need to see the lighting down under the tunnel as well as up top. And we have a lot of, you know, different motions with our service. We're a lot above ground and then a lot below ground. And I would have liked them to really experience a ride so they know how it's going under the tunnel. Is the lighting clear under the tunnel? Can they see what's going on? And especially here, we would like to be able to ride the car so we'll know what to expect if we're going to be sitting in someone's lap when it curves.
So I appreciate that comment. I wish we could have ridden too. The R211 in New York is still being commissioned, and it's not qualified for passengers to be on board to go through yet. They're still testing it. So that's why we couldn't ride. When we get some equipment here to display, we'll be able to share that. We have three stages. One is the soft mock-up, one is the hard mock-up before the first pilot car is delivered. And again, with the pilot car, while we won't be able to take passengers in real service, we'll be able to let you step on that. And ultimately, you know, customers will have the opportunity to board the cars just after the testing phase. So there's lots of different stages of this. It's not the only opportunity. The point of going to New York was to be able to see how the interiors worked, really, in an open gateway configuration. That's really what we got out of it.
How are we doing on time? Phil has his stuff.
We are about 13 minutes behind schedule at this point.
Okay, one quick question, Phil.
The new cars we were told were going to have heated floors and wonderful air conditioning. And I wonder if the A and B cars will be independently heated and air conditioned. So that when you run into the infamous hot car during the summer, you're not trapped in A and B. You can still only have to go to the next A or the next B to get out of that.
So I'm going to let Dave answer that. I will say we're going to heated flooring in the 8000 series trains, which will spread the heat out more evenly through the cars than what you've experienced in the past, which I'm excited about. Dave, do you want to talk about the units and the HVAC and how that works?
So yeah, there's actually two HVAC units on each car. So normally you don't have both systems fail at the same time. But of course, if you did have a failure, then that you would have some reduction in the air conditioning amongst a married pair, but you would be still have 3/4 of the power.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, both David and Lynn. I'm sure you'll be back to us or we'll be back to you, but thanks again for coming today to give us an update.
Thanks for your continuous input, Mr. Chairman.
Menu bar alert. Hands now raised.
I am so sorry. I do have a question,
David,
if I may.
Well,
if not,
we'll move on to the next. We're already way over time.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
This is Anu. Vanessa, if you'd like to email your question, we can definitely get that
answer. Okay. Will do. Thank you.
Okay. So our next topic of discussion is the Metro Bus Courtesy Stops Policy. And we do have Jule Bell and Gregory Edwards with us. So Jule, if you would come off of mute and I will have your presentation on the screen when you are ready.
I am ready when you are, and good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon. Go for it.
So thank you for having me. And while Anu is bringing up the presentation for the group, just want to talk about the Courtesy Stop Initiative that Bus Services is actually going to bring forth June of this year. As you all know, safety is at the forefront of safety is at the forefront of everything we do as an agency. Customer service is also important as we look to be responsive to the customer's needs in a safe manner. Anu, you can go to the second slide. Thank you. So with that being said, Bus Services will offer the ability to extend courtesy stops to all customers from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. beginning June of this year. Offering courtesy stops certainly provides all kinds of benefits, but specifically, it allows customers to alight at locations closer to their destination. It increases safety for the riders and bus operators, and certainly improves the customer service. Next slide, Anis. Some of our regional partners that are doing courtesy stops include Regional Transit in Rochester, New York, New York City Transit and MTA in New York City, New Jersey Transit in New Jersey, Chicago Transit in Chicago, Illinois, and Southeast Philadelphia Transit, which is SEPTA in Philadelphia, and LA Metro in Los Angeles, California. We wanted to bring this to you all because we met with the Rider Advisory Committee last month on April 12th and gave the same presentation to that group and wanted to make sure that everyone knew what we were doing as it related to courtesy stops and being offered to all customers. Would like to give you an opportunity to ask some questions, as I do have some follow-up to go back to the Riders Advisory Committee and give them some follow-up based on some questions that they had.
Jewel, could you tell us what that they had?
So some of the things that they did ask about was how would customers be able to inform the operator about wanting a courtesy stop. So we've been doing some testing, talking to operators, looking at some of the best practices from our business partners. And one of the things that we've decided on is the person wanting the courtesy stop would ring the bell, begin to walk to the front of the bus, inform the operator of where they wanted to get off at before or after stop, and they would be alighted at that point.
Joel, you mentioned courtesy stops in terms of disembarking from the bus. What about courtesy stops for those who feel safer at a different place from a bus stop? How about courtesy stops so they can feel more safe in getting on a bus?
So thank you for that. That was something that was asked, and right now it is an alighting only. But as part of the communication that's going out to our operators, we know there were some people alight. Some people would probably want to get on, especially if they see that this is occurring often. So we're not discouraging the operator to not let a customer on the bus if they want to alight, to allow them to board in what they feel is a safe location. If somebody is getting off, they'll be able to get on.
So it's possible both to get on at a courtesy stop, if the bus stops in a courteous way, as well as to get off at a courtesy stop. Yes. So it goes ways. Thank you, Jewel.
Yes.
We have some questions.
Denise? Yes, and Ms. Rush has her hand up.
Denise?
Yes, this is Denise Rush. I think it's terribly dangerous. I hope that none of the visually impaired people do that, or wheelchair, because how, if they have a bus schedule, how will the bus drivers meet their schedule? If the bus tells me they're going to be there at 5 o'clock, and before they got five courtesy stops before they get to my stop, how do they keep, how does a bus driver maintain his schedule? Because not only does that courtesy stop in letting someone get off the bus, it holds up traffic and it makes them off the schedule. But if a visually impaired person says, well, rings the bell and says, let me off, I think it's a dangerous situation. That's just my opinion.
Jewel?
So thank you for sharing, Ms. Rush. And certainly our goal is not to put anyone in a dangerous situation. The operators will be trained on courtesy stops, particularly not allowing people to board in locations that are not safe. Our goal is to make sure that all of the customers are safe. And if someone requests to get off at a location that is deemed unsafe by the operator, that's where the communication has to happen between the operator and the customer to let them know that this is not a safe location for you to alight. Allow me to take you either further down or to the next bus stop because I want to make sure you get off in a well-lit, safe area. So our goal is not to put anyone in a safety hazard condition.
Well, I'm not saying that letting them off, definitely not a blind person saying I'm closer to my house at this stop. But how do you really know when it's dark or it's the sun is getting ready to go down? Or it's just too many variables for a visually impaired person or a blind person or even a wheelchair. It's going to take a while to let a wheelchair person off, and that's holding. Okay, how do you keep your bus schedule doing that?
Well, it's not an established amount of courtesy stops that are happening. It's certainly at the discretion of the person that wants to alight. And after 9 o'clock, the ridership is a little different than it is during rush hour. So it could be an opportunity for a person to let somebody off at a courtesy stop and still be able to maintain schedule.
Really? Okay. That's just my thought.
Patrick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. I'm sort of following along with what Denise just said. A couple of, maybe it was last month or something like that, we had a example of a bus driver that let somebody off and the ramp was not properly seated, I believe, at a bus stop, and that person went over the edge and got very badly scraped up and beaten up or whatever. I would think that if you have a courtesy stop, is that going to be just a regular stop? Is the level of the ramp of the for the person in a wheelchair getting off going to be at the recommended slope, or is it going to be at a much greater slope? We have been on a few demonstrations where the slope of the ramp was much higher than it could be. I'm just concerned that for wheelchair users, and I'm not one, so other people who are speak up, that the, you know, letting them off at a courtesy stop, whether that's going to be sufficiently safe, is the ramp level going to be at a level that they're used to, or is it going to be much steeper? And then if the driver is the one that's going to have to make the decision, I think that puts too much responsibility on the driver to know that, oh, A stop is okay for the wheelchair user, B stop is not.
Jewel?
Thank you. And thank you for that information. And definitely, I'm sorry to hear about the person who recently got hurt that you mentioned. So as we're training the operators, again, we want to make sure that we're going out, we're doing some tests, we're going through some procedures with operators to make sure that they ensure that before they let a person off, the ramp is deployed and the person is able to get off without injury. Again, that's that good judgment and communication that has to happen between the operator and the customer to inform them that this doesn't appear to be a safe location. Let me take you down a little further if you want to get off anywhere outside of the bus stop. And the communication should make sure that the person is safe and the operator is performing their job without incident.
And I'm sorry, thank you for that. A quick question. When was this going to start? Was there a start date or you're still collecting data?
Still collecting data, but the target start date is June of this year.
That's like in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Okay.
Thank you, Pat. Are there any other questions from members?
Gino?
Yes.
Tawan Armour. Good afternoon, sir. I do have a question. So I understand where our focus for the most part is over safety, and I understand that. I just want a piece of clarification that will courtesy stops be available 24/7 or as long as the bus is running, or will that strictly be after a particular hour, like 9 p.m. to midnight or what?
So I think I heard you, you broke up a little bit, but I think you asked about the time of the courtesy stops.
That is correct.
Okay. 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. is the projected time right now.
I can understand the concern because the hours are late and visibility may be reduced, but I will acknowledge as a person with a disability, being able to be let off closer to proximity to my home or any particular destination is appreciated, but I do share the same concerns that my fellow committee members share.
Thank you. Thank you, Duane. Any other members have questions for Jewel?
This is Anu. I do not see any more hands up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jewel. If anyone has any further questions, please email them to Anu for forwarding to Jewel. Thank you, Jewel. Anu?
I pressed 9.
Okay.
I pressed star 9.
Doris, for some reason, we did not see your hand up, but go ahead.
Okay. What I wanted to say is I want to join the others in their concerns, and I'm a regular bus rider and often in the evening after 9 p.m. And where I ride is both a combination of regular sidewalk stops as well as stops that are on highway. And so I'm concerned that it be limited to regular stops, unless, of course, if somebody knows there's a more accessible stop. But the thing that I did want to note or ask about, is there any consideration to these courtesy stops to allowing a driver to stop, say, in bad weather like ice and snow, and assist someone across, particularly stops on larger intersections where there's 6 or 8 lanes of traffic, and because on one occasion, and it was something like 10 years ago, but on one occasion we had a horrible ice storm, and because the driver was concerned about the safety of all of his passengers, he assisted me across Route 50 where it was absolutely solid ice. And I would hope that there would be a policy like that to help somebody else, in passengers in that situation, as a blind person and just as a passenger who not good dealing with ice, period, and situations like
that. So thank you for that question, Ms. Ray, and I've taken that as a note. I just want to make sure that I communicate. We have operators now who, as you stated, see customers that need assistance and do get off and help them across busy streets, intersections, particularly Route 50 is what I heard you talk about. So that actually is occurring now. I'll take it as a note, as I mentioned, for a rule to allow this to happen. But again, it's something that's happening now as operators are doing it.
Okay, if there are no other questions, thank you, Jewel. And we're sorry we started late, but it looks like we're making it up. Thank you, Jewel.
Thank you.
All right. Anu? And our next topic is the Better Bus Network Redesign. And for that, we have William Jones. So, William, if you would.
William?
Yes, he is off of mute.
Good afternoon. Good evening. I am William Jones, and I am going to share my screen and share an update on the Better Bus Network Redesign, which is an effort within Metro in conjunction with the City of Fairfax Q in Prince George's County, the bus, to look at designing a bus network that the region needs and deserves. This is an update to the current effort that has been going on since last fall. The purpose of this meeting is to provide an update on the Better Bus Network redesign and to provide highlights from the Draft Visionary Network and upcoming public and other audience outreach events. Just to give context to what's being shown on the screen, this Better Bus Initiative the network redesign is one of several efforts that the agency is looking at. Some of the other efforts do include bus stop and shelter improvements, priority lanes and signals, facilities moderation, looking at the future of the fleet, converting it to zero emissions, looking at how to improve the customer information. These are other initiatives that are part of the Better Bus initiative and effort. The purpose of this evening's presentation is to talk specifically about the network redesign, which is looking at redesigning bus services to meet the needs of the region. Currently, we are in phase two, public and stakeholder engagement. This project started in July of 2022. And during that time between July 2022 and December 2022 was phase one, where the project team gathered and analyzed data. During the months of October and November, the team did conduct public outreach and also had stakeholder engagement events. And during that time, as you all are aware, we did finalize goals and objectives on how we're going to shape this draft visionary network that I'm going to share in a moment. During the months of January, February, March, the team worked with various stakeholders throughout the region, provided data, information, feedback from the public, feedback from operators on how to look at developing network options, for which we're taking out for public feedback now. This is a draft visionary network, and we are a ways away from any routes being changed or anything being finalized. We have a ways to go. So we're here to share some information and let you know about opportunities to provide feedback, and certainly any questions in this setting we'll take, and any questions that need to come after this, certainly give those to Anu and we will respond accordingly. The public comment period is open and it will run through June 5th. So next set of slides will go through highlights from the draft visionary network, this proposed network that we're taking out for public comment. Again, it's draft. There's nothing etched in stone. So I just want to make sure to let you all know that the feedback that we receive in this phase, this month and going into June, will help us to further refine the network. So as I mentioned, that this draft visionary network is looking at designing the bus service that the region needs. And so with that, there we go. We're looking at regional connectivity, matching when and where people want to travel. We're also looking at a network that can provide quality customer and operator experience. One of the things that we heard during the months of October and November from the public, they desire to have fast, frequent, and reliable service. And one of the things that we're doing as a part of this effort is we're assuring that this draft visionary network addresses inequalities and increases access to opportunity for disenfranchised communities. This draft visionary network could attract 40 to 45,000 additional weekday trips and 30 to 35,000 additional weekend trips. And if we're able to attract more residents and passengers to use transit, it will help us to avoid over 14,000 metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions a year as a result of this draft visionary network. Some of the essentials that we are looking at as part of this is to ensure that persons can take transit 7 days a week across the region. Service that we're looking at should operate as frequently as possible and not less than every 30 minutes. So a bus showing up every 30 minutes or less. In some places, it'll be more frequent than that. And also looking to establish a 24-hour network that will support the needs of the region. some of the examples of potential new connections that we're looking at in terms of increased cross-town and cross-county connections. We're also looking at connecting key destinations, including transit hubs with direct and frequent routes. And we're also looking at extending service beyond jurisdictional borders. And some of the examples are having a proposed route that a potential new connection that would connect between New Carrollton, Addison, and Suitland stations, extending the reach of the Purple Line. Also, we're looking at connecting to transit hubs along the existing Route 38B that runs between the district and Arlington County, having it be extended from Boston Station to Seven Corners Transit Center. Also looking at the prospect of connecting to hospitals, schools, and employment. A couple of examples are more connections to National Harbor, as well as connecting to the new Innova Alexandria Hospital Center, which will be at the site of the old Landmark Mall in Alexandria's West End. And also looking to connect adjacent neighborhoods across municipal boundaries. For example, looking at Fort Lincoln and Deanwood, and also making the connection through Chevy Chase Circle instead of having to transfer at Chevy Chase Circle where the district and Montgomery County meet, being able to have service that will run across and through Chevy Chase Circle from the district into Maryland and vice versa. This next image I'll explain in a little bit of detail. But before I go into that, the Drive Visionary Network seeks to connect the region by providing more access to high frequency service to more people at more times of the day. In this visual on the right hand side of the image in the upper left hand corner, it gives you a table or a legend, if you will. The red lines represent service that's operating 12 minutes or less currently. The blue, 12 to 20 minutes, the light blue, 20 to 30 minutes, and the navy blue or darker blue, over 30 minutes. The visual that you're seeing on the right-hand side is looking at the existing bus services that run through wards 7 and 8 within DC and its connection over into Prince George's County, situated along the East Capitol Street and Central Avenue corridor. And this is the existing service that is there today. A lot of routes in a lot of different neighborhoods. What we're hoping to do with the Drive Visionary Network is to propose a network that increases frequency within Ward 7 and 8 and provides frequent connections through the district into Prince George's County along that East Capitol Street and Central Avenue corridor. As you were able to tell, the number of red lines increased. So we're looking to increase the amount of access residents would have to bus service running 12 minutes or less. And this 12 minutes or less or 20 minutes or less, we'll be looking at between the times of 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., 7 days a week. Now, service will run later than 9 p.m. And in some instances, we have proposed recommendations that will look at running service 24 hours a day. But what we want to do as part of this Drive Visionary Network is to give a consistent frequency throughout the day that passengers can come to expect. And on the left-hand side of the screen, what that means is 73% more service on Saturdays, 64% more service on Sundays, and 60% more service during the weekday midday, where passengers would have access to bus service running 12 minutes or better. The Drive Visionary Network, in terms of connecting the region, also is looking at providing access on Saturdays and Sundays, where in some instances passengers do not have. Also, we're looking to connect approximately 1.1 million residents across the region with the prospect of 24-hour bus service. That would also include 307,000 residents that would have more access to late night bus service between 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. We're also looking to make improvements greater in terms of service for residents of equity-focused communities. And 99% of residents who currently have bus service will continue to have bus service under the Visionary Network. On the right-hand side, you see an example of Route B2 that runs between Mount Rainier and Anacostia. One of the things that we're looking at as part of Draft Visionary Network is to be able to connect residents to more opportunities to go to shopping, employment opportunities. And this particular improvement looks at extending that service to West Hyattville Station and providing a service that would run 12 minutes or better 7 days a week during that time window that I spoke about early on. Another example that we're looking at is being able to provide residents with access to jobs within 60 minutes on transit. And to be able to do this, Draft Visionary Network looks at being able to provide access to an additional 13,000 jobs within 60 minutes on transit. Residents will have better access to grocery stores, especially on the weekends at midday. And residents of equity-focused communities in DC will be able to access more K through 12 schools within 60 minutes on transit as a result of the Draft Visionary Network and the proposed service recommendations that we're looking at. The example on the right is bus service between Anacostia and Eastover, which are current routes A6, A7, and A8. The star just below the blue lines represents the location of the giant grocery store that's in the Eastover Shopping Center. If someone's taking that bus today, they would have to get off along Southern Avenue and walk the balance of the way or wait for some other bus connection to reach that location. As a part of the Draft Visionary Network, we're proposing to streamline service through the neighborhoods and also provide connections in a one-seat ride fashion from Southeast 3C to the grocery store and the Eastover Shopping Center. Also, there's looking at a connection here that will run from Anacostia through Southeast DC to National Harbor to give persons opportunity a one-seat ride and better access to job opportunities there at National Harbor. Another example, we sought to improve the customer experience as part of the Draft Visionary Network to make trips more convenient for those who desire to have the quicker trip, if you will. So what we're looking at is faster average trips for current bus passengers with 10% more trips that could be taken within 30 minutes or less, and also 20% more trips could be made in the region conveniently by transit. The Draft Visionary Network and the recommendations thereof, those improvements we would hope will save bus customers almost 20,000 hours every weekday. An example is in Arlington in the city of Alexandria with the current route 10B that runs from Ballston to Hunting Point through Shirlington Transit Center. As a part of looking at how to make trips more convenient and also to provide additional connections to the Potomac Yard development and to take advantage of the transitway infrastructure along Route 1 in the city of Alexandria, the proposal that we're looking at is to have the 10B and its recommendation, which is a different route, I'll explain that in a moment, to run along Sound Glebe Road and also serve the Potomac Yard area. But it would operate skipping Shirlington Transit Center, and it would use the Metroway bus lanes along Route 1, as stated, to help to make the trip convenient between those communities. So these are just some of the examples that we're looking at in terms of improving the customer experience by making convenient transit trip options. Also with that, we're also looking at providing more bus service in dedicated and prioritized facilities. And so by doing that, we seek to provide more bus service that would operate on streets with bus priority, making service faster and more reliable to operate. Now, I will make a note here that the map that you see on the right-hand side of this slide is existing and planned dedicated and prioritized facilities. So not all of these are implemented, but the resulting work of that effort with the municipalities that are designing and seeking to implement these planned, dedicated, and prioritized facilities, it would help us to provide 84% more service on Sundays, 64% more service on Saturdays, and 39% more on weekday middays as we work with the municipal counties and cities and their DOTs to maximize investments in bus priority infrastructure. Lastly, for this piece, these recommendations are based upon a lot of data that the team has taken in, feedback that we receive from the public, from bus operators, from our fellow transit and transportation colleagues over the past several months, going back to September, to form this draft visionary network. Implementing a draft network will require an increase in funding for bus in the region, and that's something that the agency acknowledges. The goal of this is to get feedback, to get input, to support how we go about seeking to obtain funding for those services. The recommendations that you'll see in this do not specify which operator will operate the service, nor have we yet specified stops or stopping patterns. So those are elements that are still coming as a part of this effort. Since we redesigned the network, some of the routes, many of the routes are not exactly the same as they are today. So temporary bus route numbers were put in as part of this study to accommodate the new routes and changes to existing routes. In terms of engagement, as I mentioned, we are in the this process of collecting feedback. As you all are aware, back in February, Metro Bus made 50 years. So as a part of this effort, we're hosting 50 events in 50 days in celebration of 50 years of Metro Bus. And we have done a lot of outreach so far over the past few weeks. We have staff that are collecting surveys on buses. We have teams that are doing pop-up events at various rail stations and various locations throughout the region. We have had some webinars, lunch and learn webinars. We had the one for Virginia last week and one for the district on tomorrow afternoon. We also have been working with community-based organizations and speaking with them to help get the word out about this effort. And there's so much more. Those who can't make the events in person, and I'll share more about that, what's left, WMATA.com/betterbus is the best place to get all of the information that you need and to provide feedback on the Draft Visionary Network. Real quick, we call it the Better Bus Virtual Experience Lab, and this is what you'll see if you go to the WMATA website, WMATA.com/betterbus. We have information where you can put in a trip and see how your trip would change today in the Draft Visionary Network versus what it is today. There's also a place where you can comment on your route specifically and leave route by route feedback on an interactive comment map. And there's also a map library that has static images of what the maps look like, including profiles and information on the proposed span and the proposed frequencies. And upcoming activities, as I mentioned, we do have a webinar tomorrow that is DC focused, and that's from 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. The next workshop that we have will be in Arlington County at the Central Library on Wednesday, May 10th, this Wednesday, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. If you're in the district, we do have an event on Saturday, May 20th at the Turkey Thicket Recreation Center, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And if you're in Maryland, we have a workshop on Sunday, May 21st at the Creative Suitland Arts Center from noon to 3 p.m. I will stop there and take any questions and provide any clarifications if I said anything that didn't make sense.
Tawan, let me just ask one question first. This is Tino. Mr. Jones, July 1st starts the new budget year, a budget approved by the WMATA board, how much of what you've described might begin on July 1st?
Well, that's a very good question. We have a ways to go. So what is a part of Draft Visionary Network will not be implemented on July 1 of this year. We have a ways to go in terms of getting feedback and refining the network. So we're a ways away from actually making any changes that residents and passengers would see as a part of this. So we have a ways to go. There's still some feedback we're going to need to receive. Mainly, we're just trying to find out, are these recommendations helping you where you need to go? There is discussion about, is there going to be limited stop service in the future? Is there going to be some form of express services in different places? So we still have those questions to answer and to get feedback. So we're a little ways away from that.
As I understand it, Prince George's is having WMATA staff do the new planning for Prince George's County. Ride On in Montgomery County is also doing its own. In contrast, Montgomery County is doing its own planning. Prince George's is leaving it up to you all. It's really important for Montgomery County folks to deal with their own regional, their own jurisdiction, and Prince George's has to rely on you, Mr. Jones, right?
Not necessarily. So it's a broader team effort. And there's one other thing I would mention about that. So currently, Montgomery County has their Ride On Reimagined. Arlington County is still doing their transit strategic plan. Both of those efforts, myself and other members of the project team are in coordination with them. So we do have coordination briefings with Montgomery County as a part of that. So while our team is not doing the work for Montgomery County, we are in lockstep with them. And the same goes for Arlington County. We are in lockstep with them. They have different timelines. And so we're acknowledging that they have different timelines. Some of their improvements may be later down the road, but we're working in close coordination with them so they're not conflicts, if you will, in terms of service provision so that we can work to provide the best service network that the region needs. In terms of Prince George's County, it is a partnership. They're our partner along with the city of Fairfax Q. And so they're my transit cohorts in Prince George's County are part of this effort as well as the transit staff with the city of Fairfax Q. So we're in a partnership on this effort. So in a sense, it's a broader team effort and we're working together to provide the best service that the region needs. When it gets time to implement, we hope that we can also continue that effort, but we're ways away from there. So we don't, so we have a ways to go, I would say.
Understood. Anu, could you bring back the gallery screen so we can see what?
Yeah, so William, I'll stop sharing your screen at this point.
Yeah.
And thank you. So Chair Calabia, this is Anu. We do have several members with their hands up.
Yes.
Just to make sure that we get everybody's questions and answers in within the meeting time. I would start the timer for 2 minutes, and if we have any remaining time and anyone has more questions, we can definitely come back. So Ms. Rush, you are first, followed by Tawan Farmer, followed by Debbie Fisher, Doris Ray, okay. And Pat Sheehan. So go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Thank you. This is Ms. Rush. Thank you for all your information. In your describing changes and concerns areas, I didn't hear anything about 210 or going down Branch Avenue. If the bus goes to Walmart on Monday through Friday, I cannot understand how it's not going Saturday and Sunday. So I hope that the Walmart in Clinton is on the list for changes. 210 service. There are a lot of areas in PG that are concerned, and a lot of people aren't able to attend their churches, but they go during the week, but the bus stops. So if they're going to have 24-hour service and you're already going to that area, I just hope that they're on the list to be extended. Thank you.
Duly noted. There's a lot of information and a lot of changes that are being looked at within Prince George's County. And so so we'll definitely keep that in mind, and we'll continue to ensure Metrobus and Prince George's County will continue to move that forward in terms of being able to provide more daily service within the county. And those corridors are duly noted.
Anu, who's next? You're muted, Anu, you're muted.
Thank you. Tavon Farmer, go ahead and I'll start the timer for 2 minutes when you start speaking.
Thank you, Anu. Mr. Jones, first, I want to at least start. I like to start with the positive feeling that you gave me. I received a warm fuzzy. When you made reference to Anacostia, an area I grew up right there at Wheeler and Southern, 9th and Southern, right up the hill from Eastover, and the transition that could be at least in the pipeline, that made me feel good. Because I know what that experience is like coming off of that A6 or that A48 late at night. And that was excellent to know that. And to know that it's right there on the Prince George's County line that could lead to some new investment into those communities, much like what Ms. Rush just said with Indian Head Highway 210, Route 5 Branch Avenue. Are excellent potential extensions. I assumed you couldn't say every single thing that was on the platform, but I appreciate where things are going. I'm hoping that sometime in the near future, at least, your team and the other teams that you all are working with will, as Mr. Calavia said, our chair said, be able to provide a little more scope, because right now it's looking a bit vague in where we're going. So at least having some type of what I guess you would call stages to how this is looking and developing out would give us some insight on the AAC as to where things are going.
Next. Or do you have response, Mr. Jones?
Oh, duly noted. I mean, he's spot on in what he's saying, and we'll definitely keep you all involved and engaged as much as we can, as much as you guys will stand it, in terms of how we're moving this forward. And as we get more details that we can share on how timeline and process will play out, we'll certainly do that.
Thank Next. You, sir.
Thank you. Debbie, go ahead.
Thank you. I want to thank you. The opportunity to create an interoperative transit system is hugely important for the region. And I just wanted to suggest that in the process, perhaps you might reach out to some of the long-term care organizations and facilities caregivers who are some of the people who are most dependent on public transportation getting to and from jobs. They are shift workers. And I think that any effort you can make to inform these provider networks, home health care organizations, assisted living, independent living, all these places that move staff in and out, I think would be hugely helpful in the process of engaging the public. They tend not to know about it. Jobs are dependent upon transportation. And I just think whatever you can do to engage that population will be hugely helpful.
Are they on your list, Bill?
Yes, they are on our list through the community-based organizations. I know that I personally met with one in D.C. called the House of Ruth, and that's a network of staff that go out and meet with various groups. And so we made sure that they were aware to get the word out and to help spread the message of the effort to tell them what it's about and to connect them into opportunities to provide feedback. So we have done that with several community-based organizations. So we'll continue to do that. We do have a very good network of organizations that we're working with. And so we'll make sure, and we've made sure that they have the information and the tools necessary to communicate this information out to their various stakeholder groups.
Great.
I appreciate that. Can I just quickly add on? One of the reasons I think it's important is an organization that, for example, is based in Montgomery County may be pulling most of its staff from Southeast, from all parts of Prince George's County. So it becomes really important that people understand the scope of this effort so that it's not just the local jurisdiction transportation plan, but that in fact we're talking about cross region.
We have two members of the public, but first an AAC member, Doris. Doris, please.
Yes, thank you very much, and I appreciate what's being done through the bus network. My concern is that residents of Fairfax County are really not being involved in this, and not talking about DOT in Fairfax, talking about the residents. I'm concerned that there are long line buses that in the rush in the last 20 years to get buses to feed to the metro were cut in half. And so, for example, to take a bus from Falls Church to Fair Oaks and our government center, that bus line was cut in half and take for 45 minutes. One bus from Falls Church to Dunring and then on to Fair Oaks and third bus to get to the and the 1A1C connection was half. And I'm wondering if you're looking at that, and I'd like to know because I've heard that Fairfax County is not cooperating or doing their own thing or whatever, but we've lost our long line connections and the great service that WMATA was doing by providing those long line buses to connect with, you know, county buses. And the last thing I wanted to ask is you mentioned the bus from Boston to Alexandria, and I wasn't sure whether you were talking about the 25, but if you're talking about the 25 and diverting it from Bailey's Crossroads, you will do a big disservice to people who live in that area, a very diverse area, but also an area that has shared residences, people with disabilities, and you would cut them off from being get directly into Boston area. So I'm hoping that just because Potomac Yards is there and not, once again discontinuing service to people who need ride and from different areas in the counties and in favor of just connecting like Boston with
Bill. So,
I look forward to working with you on this, but and I hope that you'll start talking to the Disability Commission.
Bill, your response, and then we have two other members of the committee plus two members of the public. Bill?
Okay, Ms. Doris, it's always good to hear from you. So first, I'll say that. Secondly, I was actually talking about the 10B and the service recommendation for the 10B. The service recommendations along Carlin Springs and Skyline City to Boston, we're actually looking to enhance and improve as a part of this effort. We're also looking at having a route run between Boston and Fair Oaks Mall. We're also looking at a route between Boston and George Mason University that will run through Dunn-Loring. So we are looking at some of making those improvements. Again, a long ways to go, but we're all looking at those connections and strengthening those connections between Alexandria Falls Church and Fairfax County. And we are working with Fairfax County as they kind of did their transit strategic plan. And we have some ways to go and some opportunities where we can create synergies working with Connector Service.
We have four hands up.
15, Doris, we've got four hands to go.
Right, Patrick.
Yeah,
go ahead. Thank you, Tino. Appreciate it. No need to comment on this, but two things. I want to echo what first Debbie Fisher said. Working with assisted living places, I think, would be extremely important. You may want to check out Medina Reserves on Metropolitan Way in Kensington. They have independent living, assisted living, and memory care, particularly with independent living places. Having a bus network would be a great thing. And then I also want to echo what Denise said. Prince George's County for many years has been pretty much a bus ghetto, a bus desert, I mean. And we are really hurting for buses in the Prince George's County. So efforts that you can make on that behalf will be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Tino.
Rico, go please quickly. We have three other members and it's already 6 minutes to go. Rico,
Oh, I'm sorry. Have you contacted Gallaudet University?
Bill?
I'm not so sure about that, but I will definitely find out about that and follow back up with this group. I know we've talked with different groups, but I'm not exactly sure if we've had contact with Gallaudet University. So I'll add that to the list of groups to speak to.
I see another.
And also Dennis DC, the associate for the deaf also.
Okay. Marcy, you're the last member, and then we have two public members. Marcy, you're muted, Marcy. Let's move to who's next amongst the public.
Okay, I'm unmuted. I just have a quick question. I live in Skyline, and there used to be a bus that would go to the Pentagon and stop in Sherrington. During the pandemic, that was taken away. Is it ever coming back?
Very good question. We are looking at having a service recommendation that runs through Skyline City, through Sherlington to the Pentagon, and looking at other connections as well between Skyline City and the Pentagon. So that's something that we'll be looking at. I think I want to say that that's one of the recommendations that we looked at as a part of this effort.
Okay, thank you.
And new members of the public? Which order?
We have Janice Samuel, and then we have Amanda Hillman.
Thank you, Anu. So the Visionary Access Network, when it adds bus lines to communities that have not been served on Saturdays and Sundays, will that in turn expand paratransit services?
That's a very good question, Ms. Janice. We haven't really talked about that in great detail. So I'll actually have to get back to you all on that and send a response through anew, because I want to say
I could answer that, Mr. Jones.
Go ahead, Mr. Blake.
The answer is yes. If there is expanded fixed route service, then there will be complimentary paratransit for those same hours and areas as well. Now, keep in mind, I don't have all the information of exactly where the new service would be, but the Metro Access service area is already beyond the fixed route service area. So this may just be bringing fixed route kind of back to where the paratransit service is already. So if you see new bus routes, that does not necessarily mean there will be new paratransit service, because again, we never cut back paratransit service. So our service area is already beyond the fixed route. But in areas where, for hours or days, where there currently isn't no fixed route and there's no paratransit, then paratransit will expand to meet the schedule of the fixed route service.
Thanks. We look forward to it.
Thanks, Christian. Amanda, you're muted.
Good afternoon. Actually, that was the exact question I was going to ask, the question that Ms. Samuels asked. So thank you for answering that. Appreciate it, about the paratransit. Thank you.
Great. So it's 5:59. We're about ready to close. Are there any last minute comments in the last minute we have? If not, can I hear a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Does Anu need to make a closing, Tino?
What's that?
Anu, do you need to close out?
I can.
About comments?
Very quickly make my announcement about public comments. Anybody trying to submit their public comments can do so via email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a second for adjournment?
Second, Tino.
All in favor? Hearing no objections, this meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Tino.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill.
Good seeing you, Mr. Tino.
Yeah.